Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode 102, coming at you right now. Howdy, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. We're also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And I am your host, The Brant, for this episode. With me is...
your co-host, Brian, for this episode.
And this one is entitled, episode 102, is You Like Me Because I'm a Scoundrel. So we'll see where that one fits in here. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing all right.
It's late.
It's, what is it, 9:40?
Well, late for us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it took a little while to to get the three-year-old to bed, but it's all good now.
Yeah.
We're here recording.
It's been a rough, month getting back to school, and I had that weird injury.
Yeah.
And then Kathy's stepdad passed away, which was rough, so that just sent us all over. And then in terms of the podcast, we did episode 101 and then went back to do 100. And I didn't even do a good job social media wise getting episode 100 out there, which I feel like. But maybe that's just for the fans, right? If people don't know, we did 100th episode.
They'll whatever. Survive.
The people that are listening now are the people that, know about it. So
yeah,
there's all that. And then it's just been a funny month. So we did this best of the month clip for Dice Tower for Z's thing, and we're supposed to do another one, and I'm like, I don't know what my best game of the month is. I played a lot of games and I've replayed a ton that I love, so I think I'm just gonna pull out a replay, because it's not like a tell me the best game that was brand new to you this month and it must be, whatever. There's no rules, so I think I'm just gonna pull something that maybe I played at Gen Con. Okay. But I've been playing a lot this month. But I played Root and Castell back to back. That was an excellent day.
So that was your best day of the month?
Yes.
All right.
It was excellent. Those are two phenomenal games. And then I put a little poll out to our kind of friends group on I don't even know what you call it anymore. Just text message group, right? There's no name for it. And there was a favored of those two. But we'll get to that to the end of the year. And but I've just played a lot of good games. I finally taught Kathy Coimbra, and that was good. And I've been playing a ton of Catalyst with people, and I love that game. And, just replaying a lot. And Jump Drive has been a huge hit this month. I've been playing that everywhere. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a solid one.
I don't know what it is about it. There's just something that just draws that game in. And you'd think, let me play Race, let me play Roll, which are perfectly good games. But, man, the teach on Jump Drive, it just feels like... okay, we're playing a game,
right.
So much quicker. It's nice in terms of that. What have you been up to?
Yeah, we just kind of went up to Maine for a little bit, a nice short vacation. So we brought a bunch of games and played some of those. That's usually the case, but it was a good trip, good to get away. I know it was, it's kind of heading into season for us at the store, so it was that lead into that holiday rush, so now it's kind of hit the ground running and get everything ready for fourth quarter.
Yeah, man, I was there, 2 weeks ago, and it was just in the time machine, it was just so many boxes.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable getting ready, for that fourth quarter push, so it was cool, though. It was neat.
Yeah, no, we're doing a lot of, we're moving stuff around and kind of expanding certain areas, so it's... that was part of the balance there, too, where we want to make sure we have the stuff. We want to set the store with what we want to set the store with.
Mm.
So, which, is always, we're always kind of shifting stuff around, so.
Yeah, it's funny when you start saying, the rush, obviously totally different with a store, but I start thinking, oh my gosh, VonnerCon is a week away.
Yeah.
So, VonnerCon is a four-day convention at my house. Has nothing to do with the store, but hey, I'm the host of the podcast, so we get to talk about it.
You ready?
So, not even close. It's unbelievable. So Kathy and her grandfather built me shelves for all my games, and a year later, they built them in November. A year later, they're not painted. So the games are just going on the shelves, and then they're going to have to come off. I've been paring down like crazy. I brought you some games with me now. And I've got two stacks to go to the store. And they're not necessarily things like people, like, they're not hot new games that should have been in the store the whole time. They're just the ones that people are like, why is this not here? But just stuff I had that I was like, you know what, this could just go to the store now. Yeah, and there's just a lot of cleaning to do and figuring out, but it's fun. It's fun just having people around for 4 days playing games and all that, so it should be a blast, so we'll see how all that goes. I think that's it. We should roll into some reviews. Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
We should mention Extra Life.
Oh, we can? So, yeah, that's always good, I guess. Right.
Go for it.
So November 3rd, first Saturday in November, we're going to be doing another 24-hour marathon at the Portal. So this is the one... You know, we do one in the spring, one in the fall. The one in the fall is awesome because, you know, Harrison does a great job. He's very active with Extra Life, you know, along with a few other people, you know, like Tracy, Gary. Like, you know, there's just a solid group that comes in and they try to promote the, you know, just Extra Life, getting that out there. You know, in Connecticut, it's kind of state by state. They raise awareness and, you know, raise funds for different charities. In Connecticut, it's through for the Connecticut Children's Medical Center. So it's a great cause. We try to have like a lot of games going on, you know, different raffles, different events that are really trying to either raise money for Extra Life or just kind of get the community built up and, you know, just have fun with it. So, yeah, 24 hours, November 3rd, come on down and play some games with us. And yeah, just bring some stuff or just come on down.
Yeah, it's excellent. Pop in, pop out, you know, whatever you can do. But it's an awesome event at the store. Always one of the highlights of the year. So want to make sure we do that. Should be Harrison and probably Gary should be on an upcoming episode. Probably prior to that, and then I'll probably interview them there is the plan. But yeah, it was the same. They were supposed to be on an episode this month. And yeah, best laid plans. So so we keep going from there. We'll see how all that goes. Cool, let's review some games. All right, I'm going to do the world's fastest review. So I got Sparkle Kitty from Breaking Games. This was a game that Zephyr was highly interested in, so they gave me a copy at Gen Con. And here's what you need to know about Sparkle Kitty. So basically it's Uno with two piles and words on the card. So there's colors and words, and you can either match the word or the color. I think there's actually symbols. And you've got two piles, which somewhat makes it better. And then you're trying to empty your hand, and you've got a little castle of like cards that are face down, and when you empty your hand, you draw one from your castle and then fill your hand back up to five, and you have to keep emptying your hand and drawing those cards, and when you have no more cards on the table and no more in your hand, you win. Sparkle Kitty, you've been locked in a tower, you have a princess, and you're trying to escape the tower by playing all of these. So the fun of the game, though, is all the time you play these words, you have to say like the combos of the words. So when you play yours, you put your word down, and now you say spooky fudge or devastation fudge or whatever, and it's hilarious. Like, it's just super fun to get into. So my review of this is I played this with kids at church on Sunday morning, and they loved it. And then the next week I brought it, and they're like, let's play Sparkle Kitty. And then the next week I brought it, and they're like, where's Sparkle Kitty? We're playing again. It's great. Kids love it. It would be entertaining for adults, but it's definitely better as a family game, which it's entirely intending to do. And I would 9 times out of 10 rather play this over Uno. It's just way more fun with that same kind of style. In terms of, are you looking for the 1 out of 10 times?
I am thinking.
I don't know. It's just a thing. So there's Sparkle Kitty from Breaking Games. 2 thumbs up from kids. I give it a thumbs up. I think it's fun. I would play it with any group, but I'd prefer kids.
Nice.
Cool. I'm going to do another one here. I got
second fastest.
No, this one's not trying to be fast. This is Ion, a compound building game. This is from Genius Games and John Coveyu. So Genius Games is kind of known. They're being more known for making these very science-related games. Covalence, Cytosis that we had reviewed before. But what's great about these is, yes, they're teaching you about science, but they're games first. And I love that. They're really trying to make them... They're educational, but they're trying to be games. So Cytosis is great because it can teach you all these things. In terms of using it in a classroom, it'd be very tough. You'd have to have a lot of copies of that game. It's long. It's like an hour and a half game, but it's excellent as far as being a worker placement game and being a solid game. I don't know that it stands out in a crowd of worker placement games. I don't know why I'm reviewing Cytosis now. But for the fact that it has that science teach, that you could use it, you know, for whatever, whether it's kids or just yourself to learn the things, there's that. Okay, here's Ion. Ion was made to be put into a classroom. This game is begging, and that's not even a bad thing. So what happens in this game is it is a drafting game. It's a pick and pass game. So each round you get 8 cards, and then you draft. You draft an element, an electrically charged element. I've got potassium, which has a positive charge. I've got hydroxide, which has a negative charge. There's even cards like magnesium that have a 2+ charge. And there are noble gases, which stand alone. They have no charge, like argon, neon, etc. So you're learning all of these elements if you don't know them, and you're learning their charges. And then basically what you have to do is make pairs. So potassium and hydroxide can go together. One's positive, one's negative, and I now have a pair. They have points on them, 4 and 3. I now score 7 points. If, while drafting, I don't make a pair, then I won't score the points for the one that stands alone at the end. The noble gases, for each different one I have, I score points, 2, 5, or 9, if I have 1, 2, or 3 of them. It's basically what happens. The 2+ charge ones need 2 negatives. To gamify it a little bit, there are cards that go in the center of the table that tell you certain things you're looking for. So, I may be looking for salts, and so I need to make, various things, hydrochloric acid, or salt, table salt, or, you know, all sorts of other things, and they actually show you what they're all used for, or just, I need to get more noble gases in order to score more points, things like that. So then it just gives you some specific things you're actually looking for. And if you make one of the things on the card, you get 2 points. And if you make both of the compounds on the card, you get 5 bonus points. And there's various other ones of different types. That's the game. Plays 2 to 7 players. It's like a 2-minute teach. It's a great way to teach drafting games. This game is simpler than Sushi Go in scoring, but it's still on par with that level of what you're trying to do. And you're learning all of these different elements. So I played this with science teachers at my school who were just floored. They were like, yeah, this is exactly it. So this would go in a classroom well because it plays 7 people. It's like 20 minutes. And I think in the actual game, you play 3 rounds and score. So you pass the left, pass the right, pass the left. But, you know, you could play whatever number of rounds with kids. So, I mean, you're talking 20 minutes, which fits into a 45-minute class period, 5-minute teach. Kids can then take it and go play on their own when they're done with something. And, I told some of the teachers, like, the ultimate thing would be if then one day you're working on, you know, some compounds, and somebody says, oh, yeah, I've got hydrogen sodium. I've got that compound. And then somebody in the room goes, no, you can't make hydrogen sodium because those are both positively charged ions. What a win, right? They would remember it from the game, and that would be like, oh my gosh, they learned that, and they know what those are. Now, to gamify it more, it includes even more things. There are polyatomic ions. You can hear the nerd in me coming out. I was a biochem major my first 2 years of college, so. There's all sorts of transition metals that are in here, radioactive atoms, and then there's even little tiles. Each player starts with 3 action tiles that give you bonus actions, like the classic chopsticks, where I can select 2 cards from my hand in Sushi Go, so I get to play 2, but then I flip it over and I lose an unknown number of points. So I'm going to lose 3 points in the game, and various other features that you can have as well. So there's some ways to gamify it. You would bring the education level down on the game, but it would be more fun at, like, the store.
Right.
This game would go over well with groups. Like, it's this is the game of theirs so far that I've seen that I think is going to be really exciting to people. There's an element of other drafting games that might be more interesting. We've talked about Paper Tales that are much more gamified. But this is interesting if you like to learn along the way. Like, we play, what's the one where you line up all the date? Timeline.
Yep.
And I love to just learn from Timeline, right? So if you love to learn something while you're playing, this game is definitely gonna bring that along. If that doesn't matter to you and learning all these things in the last 5 minutes of what I just talked about is like, I don't want to know anything about that, then this theme is just not going to interest you. And there are other for that. But I think they've done a great job. I think they have made a fun game here that has options to increase in difficulty. Now, no way is this game going to get even near medium with all of those things in it, right? But that's fine. So it was very exciting, and the science teachers in the school were just, like, beside themselves. They just thought, I did not know games could do this. So that was a really neat win for me. So John did send me an email, and he just wanted me to let everybody know about their next game, which is coming out, Periodic, which is the periodic table of elements. I hope it's John that's sending me an email. Somebody from Genius Games, and I apologize, I don't remember the name off the top of my head at the moment. But anyway, they have a new game, Periodic, which is going to be up on Kickstarter, about the periodic table of the elements, which, as far as I know, no, I know that chemistry classrooms, that is a huge thing, right? Every kid's always got it in front of them, and they've got to know so many things about that. So this game would just be a way to get them learning those things without thinking about the fact that, like, you need to memorize this chart, or you need to be highly familiar with working your way around this chart.
Right.
I don't know exactly how the game works. I haven't got a good opportunity to look at it, but that is up now as something, and I said I would mention that.
No, yeah, they do a really good job with
on this. Yeah.
With mixing the two, the educational and fun. So they do a really good job with all the games that that I've seen from them.
Yeah, you would enjoy this game. Like, I know it's simple, but it was absolutely enjoyable. So that's that. All right, tell us about Magical Treehouse.
Yeah, Magical Treehouse from AEG is a real time, like a fast drafting game. I guess it's kind of a real time drafting game, right? You're gonna start off. You're trying to build these tree houses, which are just represented by different levels on cards. So, like, you might have, like, they're like purple tree houses, green tree houses. I don't know what are the themes. Do you know? Is there a reason? It's just like different types of
potions that you can make.
Yeah. So you're trying to build up this tableau of tree houses. You know, so you'll start at the base of the tree, which is typically like the ones, and you'll have to, like, go through over the course of the game, build up from there, add like a two to that, a three, you know, so on and so forth to try to build up, you know, this like a green treehouse or whatever. Eventually you're trying to build it up to a point where the treehouses do create potions for you. So each level will kind of give you a special benefit as the game goes along, right? So it'll go through, I forget exactly where it starts creating potions for you. Is that like level 3 or something like that? It'll actually start being functional to try to get points for the end game. And eventually you have to use that potion and mix it in with like another tree to score points. Which is really just pairing up two different trees by connecting them through some sort of like like a sewer, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of gets you... That seems to be one of the main point scoring mechanisms throughout the course of the game. But getting back to how the flow works, it starts off, you know, first round, you get a hand of cards and a small deck that kind of goes on your player board. You'll draw a few cards, and then as soon as someone says go or whatever, you're going to pick a card and kind of pass through like a normal draft, but you're doing this real time. So you'll pick a card and like you're sending your cards over to your partner or like your neighbor, and it'll go through. Eventually you're trying to like to do it fast enough where you can just rotate around. Like, you'll have to grab the stack that your neighbor has done, grab some cards from there, grab one, pass the rest over to whoever's like however the draft is going. This is actually really tough to to go through.
Real-time drafting works, I think, and building a tableau of treehouse cards, right? I feel like that's enough.
But I think when we were even going through, like, the teach was this, like, it was a very weird thing to try to get people to understand.
Because of real time, you don't have any time to explain rules, so you have to make sure everybody knows those rules up front, right?
Right.
Which is part of what makes it tricky.
So, like, most of what you're trying to draft, you're drafting cards, which are the trees, as well as different... There are some cards in the deck that are doing... you know, special things that kind of make the real time a little bit more of a gamified part of it. You know, like, one card might be, like, make people switch the direction that they're drafting. So, like, the decks rotate the other way. Others are, like, you know, can have, like, very take-that effect. You know, like, one's, like, everyone removes a card from there that they've drafted from the game or something like that. You know, and there are different effects that you have to be mindful of, and... just kind of, that's where you're saying you have to know them going in.
Right.
because as soon as someone plays it, now you have to react in the way, like, everyone has to do what it says.
Yeah.
And you have to be aware that that could happen.
Yeah.
So it'll go through, you're doing that, finish a round. You only get a handful of, like, is it four cards that you draft for your treehouse initially? Four or five? I think
it's five, and then
you one of the cards actually gets gets used to bid to actually determine, like, player order for building treehouses. You'll go through, there's a little bit of a board element where you're racing around this map trying to, like, control different areas which give you resources. I guess I didn't really explain that at all, but it's really, you're just trying to move through this board and place down, like, a token that says you control a space.
Familiars, right? They're familiars, yeah. To go with the magical element of
it. So they go on these different spaces, and, you know, whenever you place, like, a one-value treehouse, I think you get to move around the map and place a new familiar down.
Yeah.
So it'll go through, and you need to use the stuff on the board to bring over to your treehouses. Like, once you get to, like, the level 3 treehouses, then you can convert the the resources into potions, and then you can turn those potions into points with a different treehouse that you have. So, if that was not confusing, then you're all set to go. But otherwise, you can sit down, read the rules, and actually try to figure this out. Like the first play that we had was, it was intriguing, and I think it was more rewarding as the game went along and we actually figured out what we were trying to accomplish.
Yes, so it's interesting, right? Because the box says 60 to 90 minutes. So we're trying to explain all this, thinking, like, we're really going to... But then we played, like, 4 rounds that were 10 minutes each or something. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, over. It was, like, 40 minutes, 35 minutes. And we were trying to figure out, how would this thing be 60 to 90? But the nice part is, at that amount of time, you could honestly play this game 2 or 3 times and kind of learn the cards and learn the systems and all those things, right? So it'd be good on that front. So I feel like that's like a positive and a negative. Like, you kind of need to know the cards and learn the systems, but because the game really doesn't seem to take that long, unless we're making some major error we don't know.
Yeah, that's never happened, right?
Yeah. Then it's not a big deal to just be like, well, we'll play and then we'll play again. I mean, you know, at a game night at the store, it might be harder to get a group to play twice in a row, but anywhere else it could be like, let's do that and let's do that again. So I see a lot of potential in the game. I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting. The real time didn't feel super exclusive or like what the game was all about. Like, you have to play fast real time otherwise, right? It was just kind of a, you're getting the rate at which you're getting cards given to you, because you were saying, like, how you pass them to your neighbor, but it actually passes to, like, a carriage, and they can build up, and then they could eventually choose to take them or off the top of their deck, so you always have access to cards. So it's kind of like, it's like the pace at which you get cards. So you could wait to get, like, the perfect cards, but you won't get, like, the benefit of a biscuit.
Did you ever play Factory Fun? No. You never did. No. Oh, okay. Well, it's like that.
Oh, there you go.
In a sense where it's like, there's a speed element to it, which is helpful if you, you know, but it's also like you have to react fast enough to and actually have the like the right, you know, if you react quickly and you make a mistake, you can be in worse shape than like if you went slowly and thought it through.
Yeah. So it's very much like that. So
it was really it was fun. Yeah, I think it's definitely one that benefits from repeat plays, and it's one that, you know, I want to play again, too. Yeah. So
I have it ready to go for VonnerCon, so that's going to get played again.
It's deceptive. It's deceptively complex.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's interesting.
So,
all right, last game we're going to talk about is Shifting Realms. This is from Soaring Rhino, and it's Jeff Van Ness and Craig Van Ness. And they have a new company with several games that are coming out, and this is their first. Craig Van Ness is, you know, pretty much famous for HeroScape and Queen's Gambit, Star Wars Queen's Gambit, which I suppose is the grail game that I own, that people are always like, what, you have Queen's Gambit? And yeah, it's beat to hell, too, so.
And Glory to Rome.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
sorry.
No, anyway, but yeah, so they started a company here and gave us a copy of Shifting Realms, and hopefully going to come by the store as well, so we got a chance to play this. So when I first kind of heard about the game, it was this idea of like, hey, we know people really like Queen's Gambit, so we wanted that like 4 theaters of, you know, war or whatever that are going on, and you're trying to work through them all. So Shifting Realm actually has 5 different realms, and you pick three to play with each time. So it's kind of random ones. And they're like elves and a dragon and an ogre or a troll, I think, and pirates. Kind of your fantasy tropes. And you lay all these out, and then each player has soldiers and... not workers. I guess we'll just call them workers, because I can't remember. Like harvesters or something. Scouts. They're called scouts. And so you put these out on the town hall, and then you're trying to score victory points. So it's kind of got that Euro-esque score victory points with a dudes on the map approach. And each round on a player's turn, they can take a number of actions, and they can move all of their units on the board. They can draw a story card from each region. They can... what are the other things you can do? You can... I forget the others. Sorry, you could deploy new units. And I feel like I'm missing one. All of a sudden. There's a fourth. Not collect resources, because you do that at the end, right? Yeah, there's another action that I can't think of off the top of my head. But you
said build?
Oh, build. Yeah, you can build buildings that go out on the board. And so you're trying to score points. The game is over when two of the realms have triggered their endgame condition. So one of the realms we had in play was just simply draw through the story deck. The dragon one was basically draw through the dragon deck so that the dragon can't move anymore. And so you're moving around. The combat is really simple. If I go to a place where Brian has a soldier and I have a soldier, I just eliminate both soldiers. They're just off the board, so I can kind of protect there. And my soldiers will protect two of my scouts. You're trying to move scouts to the mines, the gold mines, the quarries to collect stone, and the forest to get wood, and I don't remember what gives magic, but there's a magic element. And you move your scouts there, and then at the end of the turn, they'll move into the locations to collect and harvest, and then they'll... or they move in at the start of the next turn, and then they harvest at the end of your turn, so there's a little bit of time on that. And you're basically just trying to collect resources to trade them in to build or to do whatever each realm is asking you to do in order to score victory points and kind of work your way towards that. So that's kind of the main structure of the game, what's happening. It's like a dudes on the map Euro is kind of what I feel is happening there. So the game was definitely interesting. I like what's happening. I like the different realms. But there were ways where it just felt like... I don't know. I don't really think of like... old mechanisms as always a bad thing, but we've definitely progressed in ways. So the one that stood out to me the most was the dragon. The dragon can move four spaces and just destroy any unit in a space it went through. And whatever, I happened to be in the middle of the board, so it just kept passing over me. So I lost like four units to the dragon, and everybody else lost like one. And there was no catch-up mechanism, which I understand. I understand why people don't like them, but it just felt like just because... I was in the path and people moved the dragon. It was very hard to come back from not collecting resources then.
Didn't you come in second?
I don't know, whatever. But but it felt funny that could just be what happens to somebody, you know, in terms of that. So that was a little weird to me. Again, I don't know that I'm looking for a catch-up mechanism, but something that prevented there. And then like building buildings was strange. You had to collect the right resources, and which made sense. But then some buildings were just worth so many points, and others were not worth much, but they gave you an effect. But the game wasn't very long. Like, we definitely played under 60 minutes with the rules teach, which wasn't very long. I taught the game in, like, 5 or 10 minutes. There wasn't too much. But, like, we played in, like, 45 minutes with four players, and it just didn't feel like there was a lot of time to use any of the special abilities. Somebody commented that the cover has like a magician, like a revolutionary soldier casting magic, but then magic was just a wild element. You could just trade three for one, and that was pretty much it. There was no spells, there was no casting, there were no wizards in the game. So there was kind of a thematic detach there. So it actually felt like a game that was somewhat streamlined, and I wanted more. Like, it could be too much, but I would like the realms to be even more distinct, or some better element that ties them all together. So I think of Queen's Gambit and how the card play is so key to, like, where am I going to play cards, and then I can gain bonus actions in different places, and this didn't have any of that. Oh, if I do this in this realm, I get a bonus action. If I do this in this realm, like that, something like that would have been fun. Some other mechanism that's driving me to do things in the realms, other than just, I hope this will get enough resources to collect points to build buildings.
Right. Yeah, it didn't feel like there was a juggling aspect to, you know, to trying to figure out what to do on your turn. Like, it just felt right. like you were working toward a goal, and if it just so happened that you were only going to focus on one area of the map, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You were just trying to do that the best you could, and then kind of go from there. You know, it wasn't a game that it felt like it wasn't like a bad game. We've had some games recently where it's just been like tough to to get finish. Through and like have fun playing them. This one was fine. It just didn't really jump out as a game that, you know, that I want to seek out. You know, and that might just be because of the way, like, what I look for in games too, because it didn't, I feel like it's one that wants you to really make this story, like, you know, kind of play up the different things that you're doing, and it wants you to build on this, like, this structure that it kind of gives you,
mm-hmm.
and I could see that. That's just not something that I do in any games that I play. So there's a little bit of that disconnect for me, I think, and it wasn't like bad by any means of that term, but it wasn't one that jumps out as like one of the games that I'm going to be seeking.
Yeah. It cruised right along. Like definitely, it did not, it was not, like you said, there was no slog to the game at all. In fact, we were all shocked that it was like, this is it, it's ending? Like,
right.
There wasn't much there. I really want to try it two-player. I feel like it might actually be one of those games that benefits from just being a straight back and forth. You move the dragon that way, then I'm going to move the dragon towards you. Like, not multiple minds being involved in that. I took it home. We probably played like 3 weeks ago now. I took it home with the intent of playing a two-player, but not much has happened. So if I get a chance to do that, I'll try to report back in terms of that. I just feel like back and forth might be more interesting in this game and trying to own spaces, but it could be even more bland because there's nobody to stop you. Like, I'm going to go to this realm and you go to that realm and there's no interaction. So I'll have to see where that is. But yeah, in the grand scheme of games, it just kind of falls in that middle. And with so many games, the middle is getting tougher.
Yeah.
It's getting tougher. It needs somebody that's kind of spearheading that game to come back out. So, but that's Shifting Realms from Soaring Rhino. But I'm looking forward to some of the stuff they have in the future as well, because they have some really interesting stuff. I'm not even bad-mouthing this game.
Oh,
I'm
just saying,
yeah. I'm still looking for, even this game didn't make me say, oh, I don't want to see what else they have. Like, I totally want to see what else they have.
Right, no, it's a good start.
Yeah.
For, like, for the company, too, so.
Going there, so. Cool. That's all we have on the table. You can let us know what you've been playing. You can email us at don't email us there.
Just try.
It's late, and we're having to do a little quicker episode, so bear with us. You can email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. So we're just going to do a quick discussion. So I said that the title of the episode is "You Like Me Because I'm a Scoundrel," and so there's a new podcast, and Brian laughed at me because I just consume all board game media, and Mike DeLisio and Dan Hughes started a podcast called Sporadically Bored, and you can check that one out. They threw a quick shout-out to me on there. I had taught Root to Mike at Gen Con, and prior to that at Dice Tower Con, I taught them both Glory to Rome. And they both were commenting how they didn't care for Glory to Rome. They were happy that I taught it, all that. They were very nice about it. But they just commented that broken combos were not what they were looking for in a game. And I can totally understand that, because broken has a negative connotation. I would call them ultra-powered combos, or powerful combos, or just combos, I guess. And I was just thinking, I was talking to Kathy, and I was saying, you know, it's so strange in a game when exactly what one person loves about the game is what another person hates about the game. Of course, that's why there's thousands of games being released every year. But it's interesting to me, whereas there's other games like Scythe is beloved, or Terraforming Mars are beloved. And I know people who don't really like the games, those games that much, but they don't like, oh, I can't stand this exact mechanism that the game is well known for, right?
Right.
Like, I don't know a lot of people like, I can't stand engine building games. Why would I want to build an engine? I know people that's confusing or overwhelming, but not like a negative thing. I know people who like, I hate Take That.
Right.
Or yeah. I hate social deduction, right? Those are mechanisms that stand out. Even worker placement for some people I've heard mm-hmm. be negative. But I haven't heard on some of those. So, yeah. So I'm kind of just focusing, I guess, on Glory to Rome here. But I think that that overpoweredness, that scoundrel, if you will, is why I like the game. That's exactly what I'm looking for in that game. You know, finding that overpowered combo. And it was interesting because I haven't seen this in a long time. Now, we played Glory to Rome like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, something like that. I don't know how long I've known you, but very yeah. early on.
Okay.
And we had to like learn. Did you play it back then?
A couple times.
Okay. We had to like learn through and figure this game out. And you start to figure out that the Craftsman is probably the most powerful action. Well, when I played the game with Dan Hughes, I got 8 Craftsmen.
And that's why he didn't
or
like...
Or 6, maybe? It might have been 6. And it was just, I had not seen that be and so powerful in a
you
long
won?
Time. Hands down. it was super... And it was interesting that it wasn't even any cards I built. It was just...
Yeah.
Build anything you want, go, and just build this huge tableau. Of course, when somebody gets that combo and it can't be stopped, the game is, like, over. It's very quick.
Yeah, no, I know, like, there's definitely... There are ways to kind of... combat that a little bit, but it's also something that, like, the perfect series of events has to happen to, like, for someone to take that win away from someone that's just been dominant with, you know, the Craftsman actions and stuff like that. But I mean, it feels like that's one of those ones that could very easily be that barrier initially, like if you don't know it well enough to actually benefit from some of the, you know, those combos or something like that, then I could see it being really frustrating, you know. And I feel like that's kind of the way it is with certain styles of games for me too, like Kemet comes to mind, or like a Blood Rage or something, where it's like, maybe for me it just, I haven't yeah. broken that barrier of,
that was a good point,
okay, now it's turning the corner and I know what I'm trying to win with, how I'm trying to actually progress toward that goal.
Those are great examples.
Because like I just end. Yeah. Like it's just it was, I could see like the games working, and you know, like it's fine. People love those games, and it just didn't click for me right away. And that again, that might just be because I haven't played it enough to actually get through. Even something like 18XX or like Age of Steam. You know, there are some that are just so much. So much, there's so much more to it than you can actually get to by playing it once or twice. You need to repeat that.
Yeah, but those strike me as games that are just, that most people just don't want to break the barrier, right? The barrier right. entry is so high, but they're not looking at it going, I tried it, and stock markets are just like the worst. Now, they may have played a stock market in a lighter game and decided they don't like that element.
Yeah.
But most people I know aren't like, I played an 18XX and this element was so horrible. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong in terms of that. I don't want to put words in my people's mouth. Although I do think on the backwards end, the one for me is Small World. And so I've stated how we play face up with the points, and people are like, that's completely against the game. The whole point is for it to be face down, and you don't know, and you're trying to find that winner, and you're table talking, and I can't stand that. Like, I can't stand that. I want everybody to know where the points stand. We don't have to table talk it. And if you decide to attack the person in last place, so be it.
In Survive, do the meeples flip
Survive.
Over?
Oh, Survive. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one where it's just...
right, yeah. But, yeah, so like that kind of... Like, when you're kind of forced to a choice in a game, like this has to be what you do for the good of the group, right? And it's competitive, not co-op. Mm-hmm. It's competitive. Like, for the good of the group, you need to make this move. And you don't want to because you don't want to do it to help the group, because that might hinder you, but you need to. Like, then somebody chooses not to, and it's so frustrating. Like, well, now we're all sunk. So now we all just have to fight for second place, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So that, I think of kind of that. But I think other games that I think of on the positive end, and I don't know that... No, I know one of these is definitely not like, but Dead Man's Draw to me is that, like, uber take that, which is the Mayday game where you flip the cards and you have to collect. It's like a pirate game, and you bust if you flip the same suit twice, and they all have abilities, and it's super swingy and super take that. But I love that game, and I know some people don't, you know, take that, it just doesn't work. And that's
because you're taking cards from people?
You're blowing up cards. You're taking cards. Like, you can go from 50 points to 10 points, you know, very quickly. But, again, it's so fast, I don't think that a lot of people have an issue there. Probably the one that I know of that I love is Ghost Stories. And the scoundrel of Ghost Stories is how hard it is. It's very, very hard. I actually don't like hard co-ops. I don't mind losing a co-op, because then there's something to attain to.
But you want hope.
But, yeah. But, like, Death Angel... You know, what is it? Space Hulk. Space Hulk, Death Angel. It's just basically impossible. So you're just dying, and you're just seeing how far can you get before you die, which is kind of roguelike, you know, which to some people's fun. But, and I like that game. It's always interesting, but I forget how just brutal it is. But Ghost Stories feels like something I can learn to be better at, and I love that element of it. But I know there's other people like, I just have no desire to be pummeled on, you know, forever and ever. When Kathy and I play Gloomhaven, we'll play... a quest a couple times, and then just drop the difficulty if we can't do it, because we're not looking to play the same map 8 times and finally figure it out or finally get through. It's, you know, or hope that it just works out for us based on card draws or whatever.
Yeah, we're no, happy to eventually you have get to. Through it. I feel like you just have to be willing to let go at a certain point on that, right? Yeah,
right.
And just, you know, just have time fun.
To move on. Right.
This is supposed to be enjoyable.
Right. We want to move on, we want to progress. Progression is really important to us. Mm-hmm. So we consider that an element of the game, right? Progression is an important element or mechanism of the game. And
whereas, like, I think for me, it's tough to, like, to not get something right. You know, like, I want to be, like,
sure,
following to the letter of the law, you know, and just getting it so it's...
We're not cheating.
No. Yeah, I know. But, like, I don't feel like you would be opposed to accidentally cheating and, like, you'd still be progressing. You wouldn't be like, oh, we cheated in that game, like, 2 sessions ago. Let's go back and nothing that we've done past that is relevant.
Yeah.
Not that I would even go back at that point even, but, like...
Right, it's hard in, like, a campaign.
Yeah.
Like, even Pandemic Legacy in the rules says, what if we get something wrong? Just keep playing.
Right.
You know, it says that too. It gives you that because you can't go back at that point. It's too much. Although it is fun when you realize, like, you got a rule wrong in a competitive game, and then you're like, 3 days later, you go to the group and you're like, so I actually should have won. In terms of that.
Is it usually that way or the other way around?
I actually should have lost. So I hammered home this combo that didn't actually exist. Yeah. In terms of that. So yeah, those are scoundrel games. Scoundrel mechanisms. I think Glory to Rome definitely stands out as a favorite for us that people tend to just go, oh, that game is not for me. But
yeah, you have to play the group with that, though.
Yeah.
So it gets better with
it does.
With repeat play.
Yeah, and as you understand it, it's so much easier to not worry about what you're doing and then worry about how you're doing it or why you're doing it.
Did you bring Glory to Rome?
No, I'm not.
For a quick game after that?
No.
Oh, no, I wasn't expecting to keep it.
No, it doesn't work two-player.
Well, Rachel's here. She just got here.
There you go. Nice. Yes, you've probably heard Rachel putting food away.
And coming in the loud door.
The door's still open. You want to close it. All right, cool. Well, let us know about your scoundrel games. What are those games that people like to scoff at, but you just love them? Or even just the mechanism of the game. So you can email us at... portalgamepodcast@gmail.com. But I think that's going to be it for episode 102. We're going to get some rest and head on out. So, yeah, big events coming up. VonnerCon, holiday shopping at the Time Machine, and Extra Life event November 3rd. So, here we go. Fall is here. Bring on the pumpkin spice lattes. Neither of us drink coffee, so not interested.
Pumpkin spice Mountain Dew.
Pumpkin spice Mountain Dew. Here we go. All right. Well, this is episode 102. And I am your host, The Brant.
And I'm your co-host, Brian.
And until next time, we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on September 26th, 2018. You can email us for questions at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and for more awesome podcasts, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Thanks for listening.